This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here, and you are listening to another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. And thanks for tuning in to episode number 97. It's Tuesday, the 23rd of November, 2010. Thanksgiving's right around the corner, folks. I did not think I was going to get a chance to put a show out this week, but looks like I'm going to be able to squeeze it in. Busy schedule lately because, as you know, I started a new job, but my new job still involves just as much windshield time as I've ever had because I got the same territory, just actually went to work for a competitor. So guess what I'm doing? I'm between appointments, and I'm going to be a safe driver here and a safe podcaster as well. So for this show, I was wondering what was I going to do for a topic. And it dawned on me that I had this long backlog of emails. So I printed them out last night, and I'm going to cover some of them with you. Emails from you, the listener. I love these comments, folks. Keep them coming, please. When you comment on my show, and some of you are giving me some good suggestions, which is great. I like to get good suggestions, good show topics. This is a listener-based show, and I want you to be part of it. So with that said, let's jump right into it. Let me cover some listener emails and give you my comments and thoughts on them. So that's pretty much kind of like the topic of this show, another one of those mixed bags. Jim from Tucson wrote to me. And he said, Bob, he said, I forgot to tell you that an attorney at the Phoenix match, I think he's talking about Phoenix IDPA match, had a shirt that was embroidered with his name and his law firm, and the whole back was embroidered with the scales of justice with a gun on one side and a dollar on the other, and it said on it, lawyers, guns, and money. Warren Zevon. And so that was kind of cool, as you know, from time to time. I like that song. I've always liked the song Lawyers, Guns, and Money. And he said he wanted to get a picture of it and send it to me, but he wasn't able to. He also asked the guy if he listened to my podcast, and the attorney said, no, doggone it, there's a listener I guess I need to try to pick up. Jim, email him a link. I hope that... that maybe he'll listen. If he's a gun guy, if he's an attorney that believes in our Second Amendment, then turn him on to the Handgun World Show if you want. But it's always good to get feedback like that. Thanks, Jim. Okay, another bit of feedback came from David. And a guy named David, I forgot where he's from. But he just sent me a quick note here saying that, making a comment on my yogurt versus handgun. I think that was episode 95, where I talked about somebody that was arrested or charged with a felony for throwing a carton of yogurt, and I kind of made light of that. Well, you know, he said, Bob, I think you're under the assumption that a Lexus threw a small cup of yogurt at the Toyota. He said, consider for a moment a half of a gallon of frozen yogurt. Going 75 miles an hour. That becomes considerably more threatening. And that's true. That's true. Now, this article that I read, The Yogurt Versus Handgun, and you can see that in the show notes. You can go back to episode 95 and look at the show notes and read the article for yourself. You know, somebody brandished a gun because another driver cranked a can of yogurt at him. It doesn't say whether it was a half a gallon of frozen yogurt or whether it was just a cup. You know, they said it was a missile. They described it as a missile being thrown in another car. But, you know, David's point here is a good one. I mean, if you're driving down the freeway and somebody pulls up next to you and they're pissed off or whatever it is, and they throw a big, huge half a gallon carton of frozen yogurt at you, yeah, I guess that could cause some damage. Sure, that could break some glass. That could maybe enter your vehicle and cause some damage. Still, though, I don't think that's a compelling reason for you to pull your gun. on that person. So, you know, the only point I was trying to make, and David, your point's a good one, the only point I was trying to make is that that situation, I don't know if that was the type of life-threatening situation that warrants you pulling your gun out to take care of an attacker. Yes, it could come through your windshield. Yes, I guess it could cause you to have a car accident. Perhaps that could be considered as life-threatening, but there's probably other things you can do to try to avoid the yogurt. Like, for example, don't get so close to the person. Back off. Back off, change lanes, make a quick turn, do whatever you have to do so that person in the other vehicle who happens to be mad at you can't do something like throw frozen yogurt at you. Pulling out your 9mm might not be a good reaction to someone like that, do you think? So anyway, but David, you know what? Thanks. Yes, thanks for sending that point because I do agree with you. Okay, Jeff, he signs his email, your friendly gut nut. Your friendly gun nut. And his name is Jeff. He said to me, he sent me an email, just wanted to tell you that I love the show. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. I've been thinking about starting an IDPA podcast lately. Now, that's an interesting thought there. He said, so I love the content that you've had in your shows. I've only been shooting IDPA for a year, but I wanted to interview experts and masters from the local range for the show. Jeff, I hope you do that. I've actually considered it, too. You know, I've had Steve Zofie on this show many times. He's a USPSA master. And by the way, you need to see the videos he just posted to the Gun Rights Radio Network. I posted a couple of good videos. One of them is him shooting, and one of them is a Grandmaster USPSA shooter. You need to check that out. Good stuff. I think that Steve is doing something. He's putting together some kind of a video podcast on competitive shooting. So, you know, Jeff, if you're starting, if you want to start an IDPA podcast and interview other good shooters, I think that'd be fantastic. I've actually thought about doing that, just never really had a chance to get around to it. But I may take my recorder out there and maybe one of these matches coming up pretty soon, maybe even this Saturday. I'm going to go shoot a match at Dallas Pistol Club called Real World Gun. And Real World Gun. There's a few people there I may interview and kind of get their thoughts. And so Jeff has invited me. He's from Tennessee. He's invited me to come to a match if I'm ever in Tennessee. And you know what? Because my parents live in East Tennessee, the next time that I go to see Mom and Stepdad, I will probably bring a couple of my pistols. And Jeff, let's go catch an IDPA match. I may take you up on that. Now, since I'm on this subject, let me go ahead and talk about what I'm going to do this Saturday. At Dallas Pistol Club, by the way, for those of you who don't know, if you're kind of new to this show, I'm a Yankee with a gun. I was born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. I'm a cheesehead, but I've lived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area off and on since 1993, about 18 years now. So I call Dallas home. I'm going to Dallas Pistol Club this Saturday to shoot the Real World Gun match. Now, their rules are a little bit different than IDPA. One of the reasons I like that match is because they let you do things like load your magazines to full capacity. There's really only three divisions. There's double stack, single stack, and revolver. That's it. So if you show up with a Glock like I'm going to do, I can load that my Glock 19 with 16 rounds, and I can shoot each stage with 16 rounds. I'm competing against other double-stack pistols that can do the same thing. If you show up with a 1911, you're going to be competing with single-stack pistols that have about the same capacity as yours. If you show up with a revolver, you're going to be shooting with revolvers against other revolvers. Now, see, I think that's a good way to do it. IDPA does something like that with their different divisions, but they limit you to only 10 rounds. And it's a long story why they do that. I've actually covered that in other podcasts, and people have posted that on the forum. I like Real World Gun because they basically let you show up with your carry guns. And you can make whatever modifications you want. So my Glock with the modified grip on it is perfectly okay for the double stack division of Real World Gun, and I prefer shooting that, and it helps me shoot a little bit better. I prefer that. I don't have to keep it in completely stock configuration like you do with IDPA stock service pistol. And the scoring is a little bit different. Like, for example, you have to have 8 points to be considered neutralizing the target. And, you know, there's a 3-ring, a 4-ring, and a 5-ring. And you have to score a minimum of 8, otherwise you get a penalty. So in other words, you're going to have a 5-hit and a 3-hit, or 2 4-hits, to be able to neutralize that target. And I like that too, because I think it pushes you more towards accuracy, a little bit more concentration on accuracy than IDPA. And if you don't properly neutralize that target, you're assessed a pretty significant penalty. I think it's 10 seconds added on to your score. So a little bit different rules, and we typically shoot 5 stages in those matches. So I may do a little summary. I might dictate a little bit of a summary as to what happened at that match on the way home this Saturday and put that up as part of next week's show. Jeff, anyway, thank you for your email. Start that IDPA podcast. I'll be a listener. I promise. Send me a link if you start that, and I will be a listener. Okay, another email came from someone, and I'm going to apologize here, I'm really sorry. I don't have this person's name, because I printed this, and I left his name off. I didn't print that part, so I'm very sorry, sir, but he sends me an email saying he just got done listening to one of my shows, and he's relatively new to shooting handguns. He says, I have my Michigan concealed carry license. I've had it for about a year, and my car PM40 he's had for about 7 months. I really like my little car. I carry it inside the waistband and with a pocket holster. I know you talked about your PM9 on a show, and I was wondering if you'd be willing to offer your opinion in a few areas. And he's got a few questions here that he wants me to opine on. First of all, for 95% of my target practice, I've been going out to 30 feet. Based on my research, 30 feet and closer are the distances I should be practicing and drawing and shooting. What's your opinion on this? All right, let me take that one first. Yeah, I think 30 feet's a pretty good distance, and I think I've covered part of this guy's question in a previous email, or a previous podcast, excuse me, but I want to expand on it. You know, 30 feet, 10 yards. Yes, I practice 10 yards or less for the vast majority of my training. And the reason I do that is because, let's face it, that's what the typical handgun defensive distance is going to be, 10 yards or less. So I would say if that's 95% of your practice, sir, yeah, maybe you might want to make it about 80% of your practice. I would say reduce that. Spend 20% of your time going out a little bit farther than 30 feet, because it's, you know, there's several reasons to practice long distance shooting. You know, one real good reason to practice that is it helps you improve your shooting skills, improve your marksmanship, but you never know when you may have to take a longer shot, what's considered to be somewhat longer with a pistol. So maybe shrink that 95% down to 80%. Maybe that's what I would suggest. Now, the next question he asks is an interesting one. He says, from what I can observe, most serious pistoleros fire strings of fire at a rate of about 2 shots per second. What do you believe a good rate of fire to be? Since you're new at shooting, I would say a good rate of fire, I wouldn't worry about how many shots per second at folks at first. If you're new, just worry about accuracy. Shoot at whatever speed that you can shoot accurately with. I'm a big believer in gaining accuracy first. The speed will come later. That's just my philosophy. You might differ. I don't know. I think accuracy first, speed later. Slow down. Slow down as much as you need to slow down to be accurate, and gradually build up. I don't know. I mean, is it 2 shots per second? Is it 1 per second? Is it 1 shot every 2 seconds? I don't know. That's hard for me to answer because I don't know what your skill level is, sir, but if I were to see you shoot, I could probably offer you a couple pointers, although I am no trainer by any means. I'm just an average guy, an average Joe that believes in shooting, and I love this, and I'm passionate about it, and I believe in concealed carry and self-defense. You might want to talk to an accomplished trainer and get his or her observation. Have a good, credible trainer watch you shoot. But I would just say strive for accuracy first. And his third question is an interesting one. He says, my car pistol has a long reset. Yes, they do. They're double-action pistols only. They do have a long reset. He says, I know you have a similar model as the one I carry. That's correct. I have a PM9. He carries a PM40, same gun in 40 caliber. He said, is it realistic to try to learn to shoot fast and accurately with my car, or should my car be a designated backup weapon? My thought is this. Absolutely, it is realistic for you, sir, to be accurate and quick with that car PM9 pistol. No reason. Now, that's one reason I chose the 9. And I know I took a little bit of heat on this. As a matter of fact, for those of you who don't know, I am trying to put together a get John Hadaway on the show because he did offer. He did make a generous offer to be on my show. And I'd like to bring him on because he and I do differ on a few things. And I have no problem bringing somebody on my show that differs with me. In fact, I like it. I think it makes for a good discussion. So sometime next week, I'm going to try to put that together and hopefully get that posted for you pretty soon. But one of the criteria I like to use is whether I can shoot quickly and accurately with the gun. Again, that's not my only criteria, but it's one of the criteria I use. It's why I chose the 9mm car instead of the 40. I did shoot the 40 car, and for me, it's too much to handle. Maybe for you it's not, but for me it's too much. But I think, yes, those are accurate guns, very, very accurate guns. They have a smooth double-action trigger. You can learn to shoot those fast. Get with a good revolver shooter. A good revolver shooter can probably shoot those car pistols pretty well. They can learn to shoot those pretty well because they're used to a longer double-action-only trigger pull with a long reset. So I would definitely say you can learn to be fast and accurate. As far as the question of designating as a backup gun, I do. Whenever possible, I carry my Glock 19. That's my primary weapon. The reason is because of the capacity. That's the main reason why the Glock 19 is my primary carry gun. Nothing wrong with the car PM9. I don't feel undergunned with a car PM9. I'm just a little bit concerned that it only holds 7 or 8 rounds, depending on what magazine that I'm using. Typically, I use the extended magazine that comes with it. I have a few of those. So if I do carry my PM9 inside the waistband, I'm putting the biggest magazine I can put in there, because it's a thin gun and it conceals well. That's the only reason, that and the short sight radius is probably the only reason why I shy away from that. So, as a primary weapon. Should you, sir, make it just a backup weapon? I don't know. That's your choice. For me, it's only a backup gun. I often pocket carry the PM9. I have a few different pocket holsters for it. One of them is a kind of a self-made holster that I took an Uncle Mike's holster and I added leather to it. I added leather to it and I reinforced it. And so I put into it a lot more than what I even paid for the cheap Uncle Mike's holster, but it works great. It's a nice little pocket holster, and it does what it's supposed to do. It breaks up the outline of the gun. To me, it's a backup weapon. Now, have I gone into areas before where I'm carrying only my PM9 as a primary weapon? Yes, I have. Depending on what my clothing requirements are. Sometimes I just absolutely cannot afford to be made at all. And so my P380 or my PM9 as a weapon is far better than not carrying anything. So it's a personal choice, sir, but if you can get away with carrying something like a higher capacity gun as your primary weapon, then yes, maybe you might want to make your PM9 a backup weapon. But practice with it. You know, like I say, give it a 1,000-round trigger job. You give your PM9 or your PM40 a 1,000-round trigger job, you should be able to shoot pretty well with it. Trust me on that. If I'm wrong, email me after you've put 1,000 rounds through it. Email me and tell me whether you're a better shot or not on the 1,000th round than you were on the first. And that trigger, those double-action triggers, they'll smooth up after a lot of shooting as well. So you can expect good performance from that gun. Hope that answers your question. Thanks for sending it in. Another email comes from Brad. We were emailing back and forth about holsters and about the MTAC, and he's talking about the Comptac MTAC. By the way, for those of you who won the $100 gift certificate to Comptac in the Freedom Raffle, I gave away two of those. Hey, would you do me a favor? Would you, if you've ordered anything yet, would you send me an email? Let me know what you've ordered. I'm just kind of curious. I'd just like to see how people benefit from some of the things that I do on this show. So Brad writes to me, he says he actually owns two MTACs, and he loves them. He says that's the best holster by far that I've ever owned and carried. It's the only holster that I can actually say that when I'm wearing, I forget I'm carrying my Glock. It's that good. Let me make a quick comment about that. I don't forget that I'm carrying my Glock. I see that around, I've thrown around a lot. I never forget that I'm carrying it, but I would have to agree with Brad on this. Those MTACs are incredibly comfortable. They just really are. I use one of my MTACs for appendix inside the waistband, and I use the other. I have two of them also. I use the other for carrying at about the 330 position. That combination of Kydex and leather is just such a great combo, and the leather on the MTAC is so well done. It's just so incredibly comfortable. It takes away some of the uncomfort of carrying a decent sized pistol. I know a lot of people that carry Glock 17s and M&P 9s and full size XDs in those MTACs without any problem. Now, somebody emailed me about carrying a gun when you're in a dress shirt and sport coat and so forth. So Brad goes on to say that he says, I took some time today and made some adjustments to the holster, and now I feel like I can conceal my Glock under a dress shirt. I found that riding the gun higher on my side and having a more severe cant to the gun works very well. I wore it to church and Sunday dinner at the in-laws with no sport coat, and I was good to go. I live in Michigan, and about the only thing that this state has to offer is open carry. I've been torn with the idea of open carry and have yet to decide if it's a good idea. Okay, let me stop here for a minute and just say that there are lots of people, since the MTAC is a tuckable holster, there are lots of people that report that they are able to carry something like a Glock 19, Glock 26, or a small 1911. Even if they have their shirt tucked in, they can tuck the shirt in over the gun and over the holster. Only the clips are showing. If you blouse your shirt, you can cover up some of the clips. If you wear a black belt and black clips, for example, it kind of fools the eye, and people can't really see the clips, and they really don't know what it's all about. And you can get away with carrying a decent gun, even if you don't have a sport coat. Now, I wear sport coats a lot, and so, you know, it makes it easy for me. But even if I'm just wearing a golf shirt like I am today when I'm dictating this podcast, I can get away with untucking a golf shirt or some kind of a straight-tailed untucked shirt. I can do that in my business. So I usually don't. Obviously, I'm not tucking in, and I don't use that feature on the MTAC. But they sure are nice. And if you do ride them higher, if you make the gun ride a little bit higher, Brad's correct about this, it does help the concealability for some people. For me, I did. And it's one thing I like about the MTAC, too, is it's adjustable. You can adjust the ride height of your gun. That makes a huge difference, folks. So, Brad, thanks for sending that in. I appreciate that. Now, Dave writes in. He was listening to me and Steve Zofi talk about Brian Enos' book, Practical Shooting Beyond Fundamentals, which we've been definitely doing. And Dave thinks it's a must-have for competition shooters who really want to understand how to push the performance of their gun. Dave writes, he says, Bob, in episode 94, you guys talk about holding the gun with your arms straight out as a bad technique. This seems to be a blanket statement. This is a complicated issue, and I want to add some major caveats to the conversation. He said, it's hard for me to accept, but a lot of gun owners, even people who shoot competition, don't practice nearly enough to make their shooting stance a subconscious skill. For these people, a simplified shooting stance is better than one that requires exact proportions. When you break the elbows, you add a variable to the equation. An exception may be a really nasty open gun, but even then, the fastest way to get results is to simplify and then add nuance when the basic technique is holding you back. He says, Dave says, I'm not saying that bending the elbows is bad, just requiring bent elbows unnecessarily complicates an already complicated endeavor. And then he also talked about when Steve and I talked about shooter's elbow. It's important to note that this condition is caused by excessive tension in the joint, not inline impact. And he makes another really good point. He says, for most people, it'll never be an issue because of the amount of time that they spend in this position is so small. Bob, please understand, I'm not trying to be negative. I really like your average Joe's adventure into the handgunning world. And he signs it, thanks, Dave. Hey, Dave, you know what? First of all, I don't take this as negative. You know what? You're offering a different point of view, and that's great. I don't take things negative. The only time I take it negative is when my words are either misquoted or completely taken out of context. Anyway, Dave brings up some really good points. What I really like is Steve's answer to that, because Steve Z answered him. And I'm not going to read Steve's entire email because it is a long one. But Steve clarified, and there's one paragraph that really stands out in his clarification as to what he meant that I thought was important for me to share with you. He says, I don't believe that having your arms slightly bent complicates the shooting platform any more than having them completely locked out. For point of reference, slightly bent means lock your arms completely out and now pull the gun about a half an inch back. That's all it takes. I'm not advocating pulling the gun halfway back to your face or anything like that, because if that's the case, I would agree with you, then it would complicate the shooting position drastically. Now, Steve goes on to say, Dave is right. I suspect the tension is what does the damage. When I went to my doctor years ago with the problem, he asked what I was doing to cause it, and I told him that I was pistol shooting. He was the one that suggested that impact might be the cause, of course, of the shooter's elbow. A condition very similar to tennis elbow that shooters get. And Steve also says, and then I'll wrap this up, he says, Dave, you're also right that the majority of the shooting public probably won't get to that point. And you know what? That's actually a shame. My personal opinion is here is that people should shoot that much. And both of these guys are right. Dave and Steve are right. The average shooter is just not going to get to the point where they're going to shoot so much that they're going to develop shooter's elbow or tennis elbow or anything like that, because unfortunately they just don't shoot enough. I have not had a problem with it because actually I do bend my arms slightly. I have not found it to be more complicating. So let me go ahead and throw my two cents in. I actually never fully extend my arms. I've just kind of got to the point where maybe muscle memory is taking over. I know I shouldn't use the words muscle memory, so maybe it's brain memory that's just taken over. But after I draw and I extend my arms, I stop just shortly before the fully locked position. And like Steve says, it's about a couple inches back towards my face from the fully locked position. I just kind of automatically go there. And if I feel myself overextending and locking my arms, I do just kind of subconsciously pop the gun back a couple of inches. It will become subconscious. If you practice this often enough, with enough repetition, it will become a reflexive motion. It'll become subconscious. You won't have to think about it. You'll become unconscious competent at it. And when you're unconscious competent, means you don't have to think about it. It just automatically, you just do it automatically. So for me, anyway, it does not complicate the shooting. I can understand how if you tell a beginner this, you might not want to tell a beginner this. But then again, a beginner is probably not going to shoot enough rounds to cause that kind of an elbow condition anyway. So Dave, Steve, thanks again for your feedback. It's good stuff. Now, this next feedback that I want to cover comes from Seth. And again, his email is rather long, so I don't want to go into all of it, but I'm going to paraphrase and kind of give you the Reader's Digest version of it here. He was complimenting my show, first of all, saying he says he likes my show. I'm spot on most subjects, but he does not agree with my take on safeties. He says, yes, I know you should never rely on a safety, because it is a mechanical part, but having an additional thing to do can be beneficial. Here's a scenario. You're struggling with an assailant, and your gun gets away from you, and your attacker gets control of your gun. Could very well happen. If you're carrying a Glock, you're going to get shot. It's why police have the retention holster that almost makes it impossible to draw it unless you are the cop. And Seth's theory is that if your assailant gets your gun away from you and he has to take an extra second or two to depress the thumb safety, it could cause you from getting shot with your own gun. And he goes on to mention that he carries a Taurus 24/7, and he says if he's carrying his Taurus, he pulls the trigger and no bang. Now he has to stop for 2 to 3 seconds or longer to find the safety. He's talking about the attacker. But since he's practiced his draw thousands of times, he can swipe the safety off as he draws and not lose any time. Good 1911 shooters use, they learn this. So let me stop right here, stop covering this email, and say, you know what, Seth has a good point here. That's something I kind of never gave it a lot of thought and never really considered that, but I guess, yes, Seth has got a fairly decent point in the fact when he says that if your attacker gets your gun away from you, and he asked if he's not familiar with your gun, and he's probably not going to be familiar with your gun, if he has to figure out how to try to depress that safety, yes, those precious seconds or two might give you a chance to get away so you don't get shot with your own gun. And there might be people who differ. There might be people who say, well, there are a lot of things that you could do to prevent the attacker from getting your gun. A good retention holster, if you learn good fighting techniques, you might be able to keep your aggressor from getting your pistol. And good 1911 shooters do learn how to depress that thumb safety just right after their gun clears the holster. They learn to depress the thumb safety. So by the time the gun is brought up on target, by the time that the front sight's on target, that safety has already been depressed long before that, and then they just have to press the nice, smooth single action trigger, which 1911s, I gotta say, folks, you can't beat the triggers on 1911s. You just simply can't. So, Seth, you have a good point there. For me, I'll take the chance, I guess, because I have not practiced, and of course, I found that the Glocks work better for me, so I have not practiced, you know, depressing a thumb safety very much, because there isn't one. And to me, I feel like I can get a shot off quicker without having to worry about a safety. Weighing that against the possibility of my attacker getting my gun from me, for me, I think my better bet is to rely on being able to get my gun out of the holster and fire quickly if I have to. That's what I'm going to bet on rather than betting on the fact that I won't get shot with my own gun if my attacker wrestles my gun away from me. Personal choice, Seth, but that's my personal choice that I make, but your point is a very good one. Now, Seth also wants to know how come I don't have any love for Taurus. How come I don't talk about Taurus guns? He says it's one of the most popular brands, and unlike a High Point, it can actually compete with a Glock, a SIG, or a Smith & Wesson for performance and reliability. Plus, they have a lifetime warranty. You know, Seth, let me say this. That's a good point. Tauruses are good guns. One of the reasons I don't talk about them much on this show is not that I have anything against Taurus whatsoever. They're fine weapons. I typically don't like to talk about guns I don't shoot or haven't owned and shot. I don't really have much trigger time with a Taurus. Recently, a couple months back, when Angela joined me at an IDPA match, and subsequently she's gotten her husband into IDPA shooting, she brought a Taurus pistol, and it ran just fine, and it was a very fine pistol. She didn't have a single problem with it at all, and was plenty accurate for the task. And I've got a couple of good friends that carry Taurus 45s. Not 1911s. I'm pretty sure it's the 24/7 style of Taurus in 45. But anyway, you know, there's nothing wrong with them. Yes, lifetime warranty is always a good thing. And you see some negative stuff out there about Taurus. I don't know why. Every Taurus gun that I've ever seen or been around seems to function flawlessly. So, Seth, your point's a good one. The only reason I don't talk about them, the only reason I don't spread the love to Taurus is because I don't have much experience with them. And out of respect to my listeners, I don't like to criticize guns that I've never shot or owned. To me, that's a very frustrating experience when I see people, they'll absolutely trash a gun, and then you find out later that they've barely even shot one and have never owned one. My personal opinion here, I don't believe you have the right to do that unless you've spent some decent trigger time with that kind of a pistol. Just personal opinion. Now, there is one more point in Seth's email that I want to talk about. He talked about a recent YouTube video that I produced. He says, I chided myself for using the slide stop lever on my Glock. He says, it doesn't matter if you use the lever or the overhand method. As an old football coach of mine used to say, practice how you play and play how you practice. If you practice something often enough, it becomes muscle memory. And I can tell you from the combat in the trenches of a football game that indeed does become ingrained in you. And the best thing to do is not to develop bad habits. Using the slide lever is not a bad habit, but I have heard that European manufacturers never considered it being used as a slide release. And of course, you'll notice that some European guns don't have their the Europeans never meant to for the slide release to be used for that purpose, and Americans started using it and began wearing them out. That I don't know about. I can't comment on that, but here's what I'll say. There's definitely a differences of opinion of whether you should use the slide release lever or not to release the slide after you've performed a reload or when you're initially loading your gun. I'm still going to go ahead and train myself out of that technique. And the reason I'm going to do that is because I've had this happen. In fact, I had it happen to me in close range gunfighting by Suarez International, the 2-day class that I took back in August. I've tried to chamber a new round after performing a reload. Rammed a magazine, fresh magazine of ammo home. I know I had the magazine seated properly. I know I had it seated firmly in there. And I hit that slide release lever. And when I went to fire the gun, click, there was no round chambered. I think I released the slide too quickly. I think what happened is I hit the slide release lever and I sent the gun back into battery before I fully seated the magazine. When I started analyzing it later, I couldn't figure out why. I knew I had the magazine fully seated and the gun did not chamber a new round. I think it's because I dropped that slide too quickly. And see, if I had used the overhand tug method, that probably wouldn't happen. In fact, I'm almost sure it wouldn't have happened. In a fight, I don't want that to happen. I don't want to take that chance of not putting a fresh round into the chamber. I can't afford to take that chance. All right. If I've got to shoot, I've got to shoot. I can't afford to take the chance of me possibly hitting that slide release too soon and putting the gun battery in on an empty chamber. Putting the gun into battery on an empty chamber is the way I meant to put that. So, again, it's one of those things, yeah, you can become smooth with it and you can become proficient with that type of chambering a new round using that slide release lever, but for a semi-auto platform like a Glock or an XD or an M&P, I would still advise using the overhand tug. Now, I've seen competition shooters using a 1911 actually after they seat a new magazine. I've seen them using their weak hand thumb to release the slide. Now, by that time, there's probably no chance of you releasing the slide too soon before you seat a fresh magazine of ammo in there. It's what happened to me, folks. It happened to me. Hearing that click, what's the old saying? The worst sound you can hear is a bang when you were expecting a click, or a click when you were expecting a bang. Well, that was me. I heard the click when I was expecting a bang, and I thought to myself, I think I'm going to train myself out of using this technique and go into the overhand tug. So, just again, personal opinion, if using the slide release lever works for you every time and it's flawless and you've got it down, you've got your timing down, and you're smooth with it, then by all means do that. Just not going to be my personal preference. If some of you have some feedback on that, if you have some other things that you'd like to share on that, by all means, that's what the comment section's for on the forum and on the blog page. And that, by the way, folks, I didn't get a chance to go over the announcements. Handgunworld.com is the website. Handgunworld.com. Email bob@handgunworld.com. handgunworldshow.com. Don't forget about my Facebook page. If you search Handgun World Show on Facebook, you'll find me. If you search Handgun World Show on YouTube, you'll find my videos. If you go to Shooters Legion and search Handgun World Show, you'll find me there. All kinds of ways to interact with me. And by the way, don't forget about my upcoming CD. Almost finished with it. In fact, Steve Zofi and I are going to be talking tonight to put the creative shooting information on there. And that's going to be a real good discussion. We're going to put our own flavor on Brian Enos's book. So if you want to order my CD for $15, I could make a good Christmas present for you or somebody else that's a shooter. Go to handgunworld.com, click the Buy Now button, and get your copy. It'll be released on the 15th. Also, digital downloads if you don't want a CD sent out to you. One more bit of feedback here, and then I'm going to wrap it up. This comes from Phil. Phil says, "Hey, Bob, I've been listening to your show for a couple of months now, and I recently began going back through some of your older episodes." By the way, folks, if you want to go through older episodes, they're on iTunes. If you're listening to the show on iTunes, the older episodes are on there, or you can just simply go to handgunworld.com and scroll through the pages, and you'll find the older episodes. He says, "I thought I'd ask you to let me know the next time that you head out to Winchester Gallery for a Cross Timbers IDPA match. If you wouldn't mind the company, I'd like to go along with you. I recently got my CHL." Here in Texas, we call them CHLs, Concealed Handgun License. "And have been harboring a growing interest in IDPA as a way to get some practice with my carry weapon. I'd love to do a match. Looks like they'll even let me shoot my first match for free, but I'd have to reserve a spot for the safety lecture, and knowing that someone would be there would make it easier." And he says, "Anyway, Bob, I love your podcast. I found it after discovering Ken Blanchard, The Gun Dudes, and Eric Shelton's Handgun Podcast. Keep up the good work." Thank you, Phil. I'd be happy to go to Fort Worth to Cross Timbers IDPA with you. No problem. I would love that. It's probably going to be the second week of December. I will email you. Matter of fact, Phil, if you're listening to this, send me your email address, would you? Send it to bob@handgunworld.com so I can email and connect with you privately, and we can set up a time to go over there to Winchester Gun Gallery. Yeah, you got to go listen to the safety lecture. You should if you're a first-timer. In fact, if you're a first-timer, I would suggest that you go to that safety lecture more than once. You can't have enough safety, folks. Go to that more than once. You bet. Having somebody there to kind of like a friend or a mentor or whatever, I'd be happy to do that. I've done that with other people already so far. I've done that many times with listeners to the show and friends and so forth. I love it, and it gives me a reason to get out there and go shoot, and there's always a good reason to get out and go shoot. I hope you'd agree with me on that. So thanks for the comment, Phil. And folks, that wraps it up, and that's going to wrap up episode number 97. I hope you got some good information from this. You know, I love these comments. Keep them coming. Keep the emails coming. I'll do the best I can. I can't get to all of them, but I get to pretty much most of them. I'd like to put your comments on the show. Let me go ahead and extend an invitation to anybody that wants to come on the show and talk with me about stuff. We can use Skype. I can use Skype. I can call you up and I can record it. Again, I'm going to try to get John Hottaway on here within about a week, hopefully. And maybe before the end of the year, I might get Steve Zofi back on here. But even if you want to come on for 5-10 minutes, if you've got something you want to share, by all means, come on the show. So, folks, happy Thanksgiving. We have a lot to be thankful for in this country. Let me take this opportunity as I close the show to say, have a very happy Thanksgiving. I hope you and your family enjoy some good family time, and of course some good food. Carry your guns. Hopefully you won't have to use them, but I am thankful this year that I live in a country that will allow me to carry my gun during my Thanksgiving holiday. I'm thankful for that. That's one thing that I'm going to be very thankful for. So with that, folks, I'm going to go ahead and conclude episode number 97 of the Handgun World Show. My name is Bob Main. Thanks for tuning in, folks. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Have a good holiday. Catch you next week.